When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Your Mom is a Check-In. I am Alana Weintraub, and this is Sandeep Parikh. We are parents and fools and trying to make this thing possible, this parenting thing. And so we are dear friends. We each have one kid, and we've allocated one child to each of us.
Yeah.
And
so far,
we're participating in this social experiment of trying to not mess them up too bad. And who knows? So in an attempt to inform ourselves, we're talking to people who have already done it and done it well, and
right,
raise people that we're inspired by or think are really powerful or smart or funny. And if our kids turned out like these people, we'd be like, damn,
we did
not
it.
Bad. We did
plus.
It.
Plus. Yeah. And we're parents or we're new parents, and we're also workaholics. So the only way that we can continue hanging out together is if we do a podcast together. That's kind of how that.
Yes.
And I love my Milana time. So that's
I love
how
my Sandeep time too.
So
as we kind of said at the beginning of this podcast, the in our check-in of the Greer episode is this illusion of work-life balance that happens for parents. And often the first thing that goes is friendship, because you only have so much time in the time bank, and most of it goes towards your family. And then a little bit of it goes, or, you know, maybe equal or less than, goes to your work. And then whatever is left over can maybe go to a date night or a gym sesh, and the dribblings can be spent on friendship. So this is our way of hacking
trying
that.
To remember that we exist, because sometimes you're like, oh yeah, that friend I loved and
I
never
love,
talked to.
I still love, continue to love, just don't have the
the capacity
with.
Yeah, sucks. So start a podcast together with all those people. So yeah, this Greer episode was, you know, I was excited to have Greer on because I really loved her book.
Yeah,
and I love her kind of mission to really want to help parents through neuroscience. And I think that there's this kind of push and pull, right, of like, of really wanting to do things like, I'd say as millennial parents, like in a data-backed way, you know, but also to do things in a gentle, responsive way and different than our parents did, but also like make sure it's data-backed. And I feel like she did a really good job of tying those two worlds together to try to go like, hey, some of this gentle, responsive parenting stuff that gets sometimes a bad rap or is controversial, like there is data to also support it. So I really did appreciate that and having her on as guest.
Yeah, I'm sure that speaks to parents who have varying philosophies, but are like, if this is a fact now, this isn't just like a woo-woo vibe. This is the science is saying, be there for your kid.
Which feels so obvious.
Well, it feels obvious to some people. You know, I have a couple that I'm really close with that had a kid, and they both work and were very anxious and uncertain of how they're going to make it work, the parenting thing and the work thing at the same time. And so they got a night nurse at the beginning, and the night nurse was pretty adamant on like not picking your kid up every time they cry, so that she learns to self-soothe. And I went there, and my impulse was very different. My impulse was like, she's 4 days old, she still wants to be inside of you, pick her up. And that's not, and honestly, nobody wanted to hear that from me.
But that logic is so convincing. It's interesting how now we have data backing up the fact that picking up your kid is beneficial to their emotional health and their attachment, and they will end up being able to self-soothe even better than the child that is forced into it at a very, very, very young formative age. And that's, I love that that's there. But like, yeah, in those moments that it's happening, and the grandparents and the other parents in the room that are saying like, well, that's how it's supposed to be done. It's very convincing, I think. We tend to dismiss emotions as like unreliable. Like emotions are very unreliable in terms of how you should act. And in some cases that's true, but I heard this, this framing of it, which I love, which is actually your emotions and your intuition are a product of thousands upon thousands of years of evolution to help guide you into making decisions. Like actually your emotions, the very things that we often or many
dismiss.
Many people in the hegemony will tell you not to listen to because you should listen to whatever this book, this ethos, this practice that we do for our, you know, group. Yeah. You should not listen to that because we can think better, more logically than your emotions. But then reframing it as like, well, actually your emotions are this tool that has been crafted by biology and evolution, you know, presumably to help keep you alive and your strain and your DNA alive throughout the course of millennia, is a really honed tool. And if it's something that you really practice being in touch with and understanding, then you will achieve better outcomes by listening to your emotions.
Yeah, they're actually the wisest, most ancient thing we have access to. Right. And we're like, but let's just see what the internet says.
Yeah. But what does ChatGPT say about it? Yeah, totally.
It's so true. Yeah, I've thought that, I mean, even in just my, I actually haven't, I think I tap into this less in my parenting than I do in my own life. Like, I think in my own life, I can tap into what do I want? Like, what do I want? And let that be the first thing that guides me in what I should do. And maybe that's a thing that's only really tapped in recently. But with parenting, I think very little do I think about what I want as the thing that drives me. Because I think at first I'm trying to predict what would be best, quotes, for my son. And that is probably the... That's the soup of information. That's the soup of guilt and my needs and my partner needs and my son needs and our babysitter's needs and like, you know, what the school wants. Like there's just so many other factors beyond what I want or what my son might want.
Right. I know they're sometimes in such opposition, super challenging. And then there's the whole like, well, but if you don't get what you or, you know, if you don't do what you need for yourself and self-care, then you're not in a great spot. So then, you know, you're hurting sort of the family nervous system, which is thereby not providing the thing that your child really needs.
And you know what? I find that to be just as confusing as anything else. Yeah. Because like my self-care is often like, well, what I really need is like solid sleep. And what I really need is, maybe time to journal, maybe time to like go for a long walk. And all of these things are then also contrasted with also what I need is to feel less bad about the time I'm spending away from my kid because so there isn't a clear line. And I think that is like for sure what my 30s have been about, or maybe just my late 30s have been about, is like, there's just no one right answer.
There's no one right answer. Because there's so many variables moment to moment as to what's happening, how well you slept yesterday, what's going on in the world, what's going on with the health of your parent. Like there's so many things that factor into the moment to moment decision. Even though you're facing maybe the same decision from the week ago, you can't necessarily make the same, you can't have the same outcome because so you do have to tap into your intuition at that time to go like, oh, now I have to factor in 50 other things that I didn't have to factor in last week to decide whether or not I'm going to hold the line firm on taking a bath tonight or not. And like, you know, like I think there's, you have to be able to adjust and be able to compute so many things and be able to tap in very quickly and efficiently to, hey, what's going to sort of produce the best outcome in this next moment for my family going forward. And it's, I think that's why there's no, like anybody who tells you like it's exactly this way is selling you a bill of goods or trying to sell their book or whatever. Which, by the way, buy our book.
and our action figures. And sorry, last thing. And I know we talk about this all the time, but the like having a second kid thing, we're like, is it right? Is it not right? Is it right? Is it not right? And I think with this, like, the answer I'm getting to is that there is no such thing. It's like, it's going to be right and wrong if you do it. And it's going to be right and wrong if you don't do it. It's going to be easier and harder if you do, and easier and harder if you don't. And for different reasons. And you will have regrets either way. And you will feel great about it sometimes either way. So again, go back and tap into the ancient wisdom of like, what the fuck do you want? What do you want? This is my Ryan Gosling from The Notebook. What do you want?
What do you want?
What do you want?
What do you want? And yeah, I think our brains are wired to create narratives to justify whatever our life experience was.
Totally. That's how I feel about my PMS. Like sometimes, or like on my anxiety. Yeah. Has this ever happened to you where like something happens that makes you anxious and then the world moves on and you've almost forgotten what it was that spiked your anxiety, but you still feel anxious?
Yes. Oh, that's, I feel like that's a state I constantly live in.
Yeah, that's but, what that is. Or my PMS, when I'm feeling moody about something, I will find things to justify that feeling. Well, I feel really stressed because I have all of these things going on, or because you said this, or because the traffic was like things that wouldn't normally maybe lead me to that reaction. But biologically, I am feeling something and finding reasons to justify that.
You might have all that stuff going on when you're not on your period or whatever, not going through PMS, and then you won't feel that way about all those things. They won't feel as overwhelming, or they won't induce the same anxiety, but you'll be in the same exact, you know, sort of external state.
However, going back to the ancient wisdom, I also kind of think there's sometimes an ancient wisdom to PMS that is like forcing you to pay attention to things, because maybe you're actually always overwhelmed by those things. You are just living in a homeostasis of overwhelm. And now it is like, no, hey, pay attention, write a list, look at the things you need to cross out in your life, look at the ways you need to self-filter. Look at this. I honestly think every boyfriend I've ever broken up with, I broke up with because I was PMSing and they were somebody that I needed to break up with. I just needed to wait till I got to this emotional place that I was fed up enough in to take action. So there is a wisdom to the big feelings.
Oh, totally. My therapist said the antidote to anxiety is organization. That's exactly what you're talking about. You know, you're feeling this underlying anxiety. And so if you can really tap into like, hey, this is what's at the root of it, then you can start actually taking steps to solve for that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did recently when I was feeling overwhelmed. I just made a list of all the things I needed to do and which of them required me to take action.
Sometimes even that list alone is like the action that you just needed to do.
Just get all of the things out of your head and onto a paper. Oof.
The attention thing is really interesting to me because I think about that a lot, where like when I was talking to a buddy of mine who has a knee injury, and he's like, I don't know what's happening. I'm doing all the same exercise that I've always done, and my knee is just aching. I didn't like injure it. I didn't like twist it. I didn't like, there wasn't a moment, you know? And I was like, oh, I think your knee is this is a little woo-woo, but your knee is basically saying like, pay attention to me. Like, pay attention to me. Like, yes, you've been doing all this great exercise. You are super fit. You have a hot summer bod and all those things, but you have been abusing me as a result for years and years. And I'm just telling you right now that you got to pay attention to me. And so my advice to him, because he was like, what do I do? You're Indian, so therefore a doctor.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, it's very Ayurvedic of you. Yeah.
And so I was like, I think, you know, you just need to listen to it. So that's the first step. Like, everybody's like, oh, should I take this? Do I do this exercise thing? Should I look up on YouTube and get the bulletproof knees? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, just like for the first week, like just like hang out with it and do it. Yeah, you can do it with the rest and compression and elevation, and you should for like a week or so. But really what you're doing is like talking to it and hanging out with it for 15 minutes. And letting your knee know that like, I care about you and I want you to heal. And so while like, let's just relax together. I mean, when you do yogic exercises and you're like breathing into the injury that you have, like, and you're telling your body, like, you know, the woo woo is like, oh yes, tell your body to pay attention to this and like, you know, breathe into the injury And I'm like, does that work or not? I'm not totally sure, but I think what it does let you do is tap into how much pain am I really experiencing here? Like, is this more serious? Do I need to take more time off? Do I need to adjust my routine? Do I need to, you know, like, you're able to ask yourself some really clarifying questions about how you should handle the injury. Because ultimately, yeah, you are the arbiter of whether or not, you know, you should do the action or not.
Yeah.
Going forward. Yeah. Okay, that's end rant.
No, I love that. I think about that a lot. Where I there was one time I had a pain at the top of my foot, and I went to a foot doctor, and he's like, "Well, I can give you this painkiller that you take, or I can do a shot of steroids in it." And I was like, "But why does my foot hurt? I didn't bang it. I didn't. Why is the top of my foot hurting?" And then I went to an acupuncturist who asked me, who literally talked to me for an hour before she did anything to just try to figure everything out. And she had figured out that I had an inflammation in my kidneys from an infection that I had months ago. And wow. And that inflammation was affecting the way that I walk, and the way that I walk was affecting the way I land on my foot. So she worked on the inflammation in my kidneys and my foot pain went away.
Yeah, crazy. That's wild.
It is wild. Anyway, so the Greer episode, there was so much that, first of all, I loved talking to somebody who was an expert. And then the other part of that is I loved talking to somebody who has a really real relationship with her mom that is relatable to me. Maybe it's the Jewish mom thing. Maybe it's the, like, I loved the question when we asked her mom, what's something you've never asked Greer? And she said, why is she so annoyed with me now? And
right. That was a closer.
It's so relatable, because our relationship with our moms as we become adults changes so much. And I imagine there's even more layer added to that when we go from being kids to being adults, and from adults to being parents who have to deal with our parents. And it just, it both was comforting to know that I wasn't alone in this struggle with my own mom, and also kind of painful to think about my own struggle with my own mom.
Yeah, that totally makes sense to feel both of those feelings at the same time and have them compete with each other.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, which is,
do you have a struggle with my mom?
No, me and your mom, I love your mom. I feel like
she loves you too.
She's just the best. So I have no issues with your mom. I'm sorry. I can't be kidding the spirit with this.
You don't want to join this parade?
Yeah. No, she's rad. So like, but I get it. I get it's different for when it's your mom. My question for you is there an element of like, now that you're a mom, you've now risen to the rank of mom. And now you're both captains of the ship, of your own ships.
Yeah.
You know, before there was like, you were a subordinate, you were an ensign or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then now you've both attained the status. And she's like, well, I've been captain way longer than you've been captain. So you're still like less captain. You're like,
yeah, but I'm like, but you're not captain of this ship.
You're not captain of this ship. And it's still captain. Captain's captain, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there is some, like, not that it's all titular necessarily, but it's like there is like you are now your own, you know, you are now the one responsible for raising this child and being the matron of this family. So by virtue of that, there's going to be some friction because they have another point of view. I mean, did you feel like that was a catalyst into, you know, having more tougher moments with mom?
Yeah, I've had tough moments with my mom on and off for my whole life. And I think part of the, I'm not sure if you've dealt with this, but maybe your older brothers did, is part of being a child of immigrants means that in some ways you are parentified because you just speak English better than your parents.
Yes,
or you're like
totally
more in tune culturally with things.
Oh, yeah.
Like I translated for my parents a lot. I wrote my own like doctor's notes for my mom that she would sign.
They're not helping you with their English essay. Like they're not getting any help.
No, and both my parents work so much, there really wasn't a, like, I'm helping you with your homework at all kind of thing.
My parents were never like, here's what I thought of The Heart of Darkness. Like,
yes, there wasn't a lot of opportunity to connect about movies or music at all. Yeah. Although your mom loves sports, and that I think is a very cute cultural connection.
Yeah, didn't help at school, but yes.
Yeah, but so I think in a lot of ways I was already parentified, and trying to raise her and trying to make her better. But yeah, now that I have a kid, there's like almost more patience that I need to have for her, because she's so much more eager to be a part of my life, and not because of me, but because of my son.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. We're still in such early days that I wonder how that's going to play out for us. Like, are we going to be the same way? Because there's like that adolescent time of like rejecting everything, that all the ways in which you were brought up, and questioning everything. And
yes,
one, and like, I think that like there's sort of this built in time to separate. Like, the kids start to smell bad, literally.
Yeah.
To like, I think, push us away from each other, like to not be as cuddly with each other, think you smell bad and think that your stuff is not interesting or funny, and they, you know, they have more knowledge than you about all sorts of stuff. So like, there's, and then you know, maybe as a result, you miss those early days, and then the grandkid is the opportunity to revisit those early days, but then you realize you're not the captain of that ship.
Before they can say no. Yeah, it's so true. I was actually thinking, you know, how are we going to handle when our kids pull away, knowing that that time will come,
right?
Knowing that we can't take it personally. Can we prepare ourselves
I did connective parenting and responsive parenting, and I did all this stuff. Like, what do you mean you're, you know, we're not best buds anymore when you're 14?
And knowing that it's like healthy and good for them. Can we actually go into it being like, okay, you don't want to hold my hand or be seen with me anymore?
Right.
I'm into that for you.
I'm okay with this. Yeah. Interesting. Do you remember the Tom Brady kissing his 10-year-old or whatever thing that kind of went viral for a hot minute?
No.
It was just he was on some documentary or whatever, and his whole family was on it. And then like, he's like laying down and getting like his muscles rubbed out by the massage therapist or whatever. And then his like son, who looks like kind of adolescent ish or like on the verge of, like, comes over and gives him a kiss on the mouth. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the whole thing. And then the internet went crazy, you know, as like, oh my God, that's so weird. And like, a lot of people had a whole bunch of visceral reactions to that. Like, that's creepy. Yeah. Like, what a weird culty thing. Like, it's just all sorts of weird, or, you know, sort of interesting, vitriolic kind of big feelings about that.
And I'm like, the internet did this?
Yeah.
Wait, yeah. People who don't know him or his relationship with his son?
Yeah, it's gross. You know, but
the
like,
internet
there's even
is
this
gross.
Like, there's like the societal, like, oh wait, you're still holding your hand. Like, I don't see a lot of dads holding hands with their 14-year-old sons. I don't see that very often.
Not in America. Really sad. In India, the grown men still hold hands with grown men.
That's
and
right.
And it's like
they're best buds. I was just telling my buddy Lafitte. I'm like, I want to let's bring that here. Let's hold hands in public together. Like, let's go.
I love that. I hold hands with my female friends all the time.
And then everybody will assume we're partners, and we're like, excuse me? We're not partners. We're just best buddies.
Like, is this how where you reveal your homophobia? Oh, yeah. So you think just because we're holding hands, we're gay? Hands?
Yeah.
No, I think that's beautiful and fine. And I actually think that if more men and probably boys had affection, then it might solve a lot of aggression. Like, I wonder if part of the reason boys are getting into fights, or there's, you know, sexual assault is most often perpetuated by boys or men, is because of a lack of affection.
Yes, by like a giant margin, like not even close margin. Lack of affection. Yeah.
I wonder, like, you know, do you need to maybe go dancing with your friends in a non-sexual way and get some, get something out? Do you need to be hugged more? Do you need or be wrestled with? Like, do you need some kind of physical interaction that you're missing in, that's healthy and normal? And if we allowed for that to exist more culturally.
Right. You were told that it wasn't. You were told that that's not okay. So you grew up feeling like, I can't have this feeling.
Yeah. And it could be any kind of repression. Like, I heard a TikTok that I wish I had saved so that I could credit this person, but they said, maybe, you know, boys aren't, or men, boys and men are not allowed to feel sad. So it comes out as anger.
Yeah.
And women and girls are not allowed to feel angry. So it comes out as sadness.
Mm.
And so we have this, because of the shoulds, because of what we are culturally taught and enforced and emphasized, and thus internalize, we are not feeling this spectrum of emotion that might come out in a healthy way. Instead, we're re-emphasizing the stereotype of emotional women and aggressive men.
Right. Oh man, preach. I feel that so hard. I can never cry when I feel like I should cry. I get angry when I feel sad. That is definitely what I do. And that
that's
is why
so funny, because I definitely feel anger when I also can't cry. I have a hard time crying. When I really want to, I'll like go in the shower and like try to get it out.
Come on.
The thing that really helps me is a hug. I can cry if somebody was like, come here.
Yeah.
Then I can like kind of let it out with another person.
Right. What helps me
I can
is watching...
happy cry on a dime. Ooh, I can happy cry no one's business. Yeah. I love doing. Yesterday I went to this orientation. I felt so embarrassed, Sandeep. I went to this orientation for my son's new school, and a teacher asked, like, what is the ritual around birthdays? Like, is it okay if we bring cake? Like, what's the deal? And the teacher said that one of the things they do is they do a walk around the sun for every year that the child's been alive. Mm. So they light a candle and they have the kid walk in a circle. You know, the candle's the metaphorical sun. They walk in a circle around the candle. And I burst into tears.
That's cool. So can I bring cupcakes or do I?
I'm so like, does anyone have a peanut allergy? And my friends, the other parents that were in the class, just all started, you know, laughing. Like, Milana's having a moment. I was like, nobody look at me.
But that is so beautiful. And like, if I think you, I just realized now, I can also like happy cry, but I can't grieve for myself. That's I have a lot of trouble.
That comes out as anger.
Yes. Like when I feel like I can't do this thing in my career anymore or whatever, or I didn't win this thing or I didn't get this place, I just get mad about it. And I just can't grieve the limits of my abilities and humanity and time. And I feel like that is, for me, that the area that I need to work on best. And I guess for me as a parent to help, you know, my little figure that out earlier than I did at 44. But you know what does like help me cry is rewatching Armageddon for some reason. I don't know why. It's like not even that good of a movie, but then like, I don't want to miss a thing comes on and Liv Tyler's got her hand on the screen and Bruce Willis is going into the space rock and sacrificing himself for humanity. I just can't. Ben Affleck is going to...
My favorite part of that movie is the Russian astronaut who is frustrated and can't read some directions. And he goes, English, Russian, who cares? Everything made in Taiwan.
I haven't thought of that quote. Actually, I've never thought of that quote. So thank you for that moment. All right. Well, maybe this is a good time. So by the way, if you're listening to this whole episode and you're like, they're talking about the other episode. Well, this is Your Mom as a Check-In. And so if you want to like listen to Greer's episode where we do Interview Your Mom, that's in last week's episode. And it's a
highly recommend.
Thing. Highly recommend. And then, of course, go check out Greer's book on parenting.
The book is called Nurture Revolution, Grow Your Baby's Brain and Transform Their Mental Health Through the Act of Nurtured Parenting.
Yeah. Check it out.
Thanks so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And write to us on Instagram if you have any ideas about the podcast, and be sure to follow us. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions, or, hey, why did you do it this way? Maybe do it this way. You know, constructive criticism. Treat us like your babies. So gentle parent us to be better podcast hosts.
Wow, that was beautiful. And but that was also so many things. And I'm just wondering, if you had to pick one that they had to do, to pick one thing, what do you think they should do? I hope they do them all. And by the way, you will get all the gold stars if you do them all. But say they could only do one. What should we do?
What would be most helpful to our podcast?
Yeah, what do you want them to do?
What's your fave? Subscribe. Oh, no, you know what it would be? Send an episode to a friend.
Yes, that's my answer. That's a good answer. Yeah. All right, we love you.
All right.
Bye, see you next time.
Thanks, guys. Love you, Sandeep. Bye.
Your Mom is a podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sandeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sandeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from Effin' Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.